You're listening to Radio Caravan with host Scott Hayes, healthy lifestyle coach Jill Harvey, and sound engineer April Johnson.
Come on.
You're listening to KX 93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is Radio Caravan. Hey, we've got a great show coming up. We're going to pay tribute this morning to Hobie Alter. But first, a little business we need to take care of. I want to remind everybody, the listeners, that Radio Caravan broadcasts on Cox TV 8 p.m. Saturday, 12 noon on Sundays. 8 p.m. Saturday, 12 noon on Sunday, reaches about 250,000 Cox cable subscribers in Orange County and Palos Verdes. And tonight and tomorrow, we have the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Rick Reif, Studio SoCal. A guest we had in, I think this was, if I'm not mistaken, Robert's last appearance on our show was Rick Reif. So,
yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, that's 8 p.m. tonight and 12 noon tomorrow, Cox Channel 3. In the studio very quickly, we have a full house. Of course, we have co-host here, Jim Bastian. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Scott.
Am I saying your last name correctly?
Bastian.
Bastian?
That's it.
Yeah.
Like Sebastian, but without the S.
We did that last week.
We did.
We also have Jill Harvey, of course, healthy lifestyle coach.
Good morning. Good morning.
Sound engineer, April.
Morning.
A little grumpy this morning she is, but we won't go there.
Oh,
here we go.
No.
What am I getting picked on for this morning? Hey, let's start. We have a guest in the studio this morning, Ms. Faye Chapman, who's here to talk to us about the upcoming week, the Hunger Bowl. Good morning, Ms. Faye.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Oh, yeah. Nice to see you always.
It's nice to see you, too. It's a little different sitting in the chair. I'm usually over in the corner.
Shooting pictures for us.
Behind the camera. So
exactly.
It's a little different today.
So tell us about the Hunger Bowl. It's next Thursday. Kind of give us the specifics of when, where, and who, what, all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, it's the 6th annual World Hunger Bowl. It's going to be at 7 Degrees, which is 891 Laguna Canyon Road in Laguna Beach. It's going to be from 6 to 9 p.m. We have bowls from all over the world. We have bowls from Iran, Canada, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, Germany, UK, Tennessee, Kansas.
Wow.
And then we have a lot of local artists such as Michael Bryan, Michael Brindley, John Barber, Olivia Batchelder, Deborah Passwaters, and Sandy Groves, Dr. Neon, and many, many, many more. We have over 100 bowls. We have bowls made by local school kids from Woodbridge High School and Laguna Beach High School and Tribuco Hills High School. So we have lots of bowls. So everybody that attends the event gets to take home a bowl made by local school kids. So everybody that comes to the event, if you're not lucky enough to bid on a bowl and get the bowl, then you still get to take home a bowl.
Well, let me back up just a little bit here. Let's kind of get some specifics on this. This is the third or fourth year?
It's the sixth year.
The sixth year. Don't yell at me.
I'm not yelling. I just want to make sure you
Scott
get
has
it.
An issue with that.
Yeah, I do. That's right.
I think so.
So it's the sixth year. What inspired you to sort of start this Hunger Bowl?
Well, I'm on the Housing and Human Services Committee, which is a city-appointed committee. So 6 years ago, we were just thinking, what can we do to educate the city? What can we do to educate our community on the humanness of our city? So I decided to let's create an event to where we can educate people about homeless and the hungry in our city. Most people think there isn't any hungry and homeless in our city. So we created this event to just bring awareness and to educate and to raise funds to help those people in need.
Beautiful, yeah. Where do people purchase tickets?
You can purchase tickets online at worldhungerbowl.org.
Can they purchase them that night at the event as well?
You can, but it'd be best if you purchase them ahead of time.
Okay. And what can they expect from the evening?
Well, we have lots of fun things going on in the evening. We have nine different restaurants who are going to be there serving soup, and all the soups are different, and they're soup and fixins.
Fixins, I love that word you use.
And then, come on, I'm a Southern girl. You got to throw in the fixins part, right? You can't have soup without fixins. And then we have entertainment by Ben Benavente, and we also have a strolling magician.
Ooh.
This year, Scott Tokar, and he's going to be there with some magic acts. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So, and it's going to be a very fun evening. And Jason Fetty is going to be the MC. Okay. So you know it's going to be entertaining with Jason behind the microphone.
And how much are the tickets?
The tickets are only $45, and that gets you five different soup tastes and a dessert.
Nice. And then you auction off the bowls, correct?
Yes, it's a silent auction item. So the bowls, we have bowls ranging anywhere from $20 to $1,200. So we have a wide variety of bowls.
And then my last question, I guess, is how do you get bowls from Iran or these other countries? How did that come about?
Well, I go online and I research artists in those countries, and I just reach out to them and ask them if they would like to send a bowl to this event and tell them about the event. And they either ship the bowl to me, or if I have friends that are going on vacation, I'm like, hey, bring me back a bowl. I know you can, you're going shopping in that city, so bring me back a bowl. And some people do, yeah.
And who would you say is the most famous bowl created by, I mean, I know you've had Weiland before, yes?
Yes, and he's going to make a bowl this
year. He's got a bowl this year as well?
Yeah.
So his bowl will be at this event.
Yes.
People can silently bid on that.
Yes.
And they can have an original Weiland soup bowl.
Yes, and it's one of a kind because bowls are not his forte, so he makes a bowl for me every year.
We had him on the show, I forget it was last year or whatever, and we had him draw a picture of a whale with a blue marker and had him sign it at the end. He said, well, once he said a pizza guy delivered a pizza to his house and had him sign a pizza box that he ended up selling on eBay for $1,200.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I know.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So he does a bowl for me every year, and it's on different mediums every year. So it's always fun, and it's always a one-of-a-kind thing. So
beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. When is it again? Remind us very quickly.
It's going to be Thursday, November 6th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 7 Degrees.
And the website one more time?
WorldHungerBowl.org.
Beautiful, Miss Faith. Thank you so much. Round of a golf clap.
Thank
golf clap.
You. Thank you, guys.
Cyrus. He does the perfect golf clap. Okay, we've also have in the studio, of course, Jill Harvey, our healthy lifestyle coach. And
good morning.
I'm not even sure. What are we chatting about this morning?
We are going to chat about the immune system. It's fall, it's cold and flu system. And everybody, by the way, are you guys worried about Ebola? Are you personally?
Not really, no.
Right,
not
good.
Really.
But a lot of people are blowing it up on social media, worried about it, wanting to run to shelters and get away from it. And, you know, really, we've had, what, one death? So the fear of it is going to kill you first. So just, you know, chill out. Everything's going to be okay. But the immune system is super, super important. It's important to note, though, that the National Institutes of Health have said that you really can't, the immune system is not a single organ that can be affected. So you really need to address the whole system. And there are no hands-down scientific proof that anything works. But there are things we can do to maintain a healthy lifestyle. And the first and big one is just avoid, and I say this the day after Halloween, but avoid simple sugars.
Yeah.
Jim, Scott, were you guys into the sugar?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Kids brought home a lot of stuff, and I picked it over about 10 o'clock. That's probably bad, too, right?
And then we want to decrease stress, because stress will definitely depress the immune system. And you want to sleep more. You guys, how's your sleeping going, Scott?
A little bit better.
Not napping as long?
I still nap. I love my naps. What
Everybody
can I say?
Naps are good, but were you saying an hour nap? Two
sometimes,
hours nap?
Sometimes, yeah. Not yesterday, but sometimes.
And then we want to get our mushrooms. Mushrooms are great. Oh, Faye, you don't like mushrooms.
No.
That was a yucky. All right, let's avoid the mushrooms for you guys and go to oregano oil.
Ooh.
Because that acts like a weed whacker to bacteria in your body.
I never even heard of that before.
Yeah,
oregano oil. How do you what do you use that for?
In capsules and tinctures. You can also just eat it, because when we eat things, that's, you know, first. So that's good. Yeah. What'd you say, April?
Cook with it. I use it.
Are you on the mic over there, April? Or are you just talking to the room?
No, I'm just talking to Jill.
Yeah.
How you doing, April?
I like to use it for pasta dishes, is what I was saying.
Oh, yeah. And ginger is really good. Ginger is very warming to the body, and it's known to pull and help detoxify your lungs and your respiratory system.
You're
do you like ginger?
A redheaded person?
Oh, yeah, her too.
Okay.
Helps with nausea, right, Jill?
Helps with nausea, motion sickness.
Yeah. Ginger does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, truly it does. And then we want to definitely up our greens, and we want to laugh more.
I'm not sure what that means.
Up
our greens.
I just happened to look over to Cyrus.
Up your greens.
Up your greens, too. Yeah. See, this is good. Now we're all going to be healthy. Boost your vitamin C. And, you know, pay attention to getting foods across the board that are rich in antioxidants, right? And if you're going to be traveling, don't lick things, right? Don't lick the tray. Don't put your fingers in your mouth.
Now you're getting sick.
So,
great.
And zinc. Zinc is a really good supplement to boost your immune system.
Yeah, but let me ask you. I mean, if we took everything that was healthy and good for us, we would be doing nothing but taking a bunch of pills and vitamins. And how do we can't we get these sorts of
things? Well, zinc you can get through oysters and different, you know, chicken and certain foods. You can definitely get all your nutrients through food.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Even if you were doing everything and you were taking your supplements and eating well and not stressing and sleeping, you may still get that cold or that flu. But it's okay because people are abusing antibiotics, and that suppresses the immune system as well. Sometimes let your body fight it. It builds your immune system and increases your antibodies. So we want to have that. That's why when kids are clustered together in all their daycare centers and one gets sick and they all get sick, not a bad thing because they're all, you know.
Where do you come out on flu shots?
So for the very young, for the very old, maybe somebody with a suppressed immune system, I personally am not hip on them. And I know they're coming up with a vaccination for Ebola. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's going to be high. Well, you guys, flu shots?
Last time I tried a flu shot, it worked. I got it. So I wouldn't do it again.
Did you get the flu? It did work.
No, it worked. I got the flu.
I mean?
Isn't that how it's supposed to work? They give you a shot and you're supposed to get with it. Oh, I see.
So you know, that's it.
Yeah, I had a meeting very quickly yesterday. Not a meeting. I had a sit-down lunch, and we played backgammon with my friend, Dr. Jacques Swarjan, who lives here in Newport Beach. And he wrote a book. Just recently about the top 10 killer diseases. We will all die from these top 10 things more than likely. And one of the things he mentioned was this sort of suppressed immune system.
Absolutely.
And that alcohol abuse or drug abuse can really affect that immune system. So when you do go away overseas and get sick or a virus, your immune system isn't necessarily built up or strong enough to fight off those sorts of things. And people can, you know,
true. When I know I'm traveling, you know, abroad, I'll definitely boost my immune system. Even just flying back from Chicago, anywhere, I'm doing things the week before, 2 weeks before, preparing. You know, I'm the one on the plane with all the alcohol wipes.
Yeah.
I wipe the person next to me down.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, if that's your husband, I understand why. Oops, sorry, Roger.
We still love you, Roger.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Cakes 93.5, and this is Radio Caravan. We're going to take a 1 minute musical break, and we're coming back, and we're going to be talking with Hobie President Jeff Alter and Hobie Surf Shops President Mark Christie, and we're going to pay tribute to Hobie Alter. We'll be back in 60 seconds. April, take us out with a little music, please.
Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world. Don't be afraid to try the greatest sport around.
Catch a wave. Catch
Everyone
a wave.
Coastline craze, you gotta catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world. Not just a fad, cause it's been going on so long.
Catch a wave, catch
a
wave.
I'll be surfing soon, and when they catch a wave, they'll be sitting on top of the world. Ooh, 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 sitting on top of the world. So take a lesson from a top-notch surfer boy.
Catch a wave, catch
a wave.
But don't you treat it like a toy.
Just get away from the shady turf and baby, go catch some rays on the sunny surf. And when you catch a wave, you'll be sitting on top of the world. Sitting on top of the world.
grave, you'll be sitting on top of the
You're listening to KX 93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is Radio Caravan. And we're paying tribute this morning to Hobie Alter and his influence, really, on the surf and sailing industries. We just got through playing a little Beach Boys music, which seems appropriate, I guess, to a certain level, yeah. Our guest this morning we have here is Hobie President Jeff Alter, who's Hobie's son, yes?
Yep.
You're the oldest or youngest?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest son. And how many sons, how many brothers are there?
How many sons is he?
Yeah.
I have an older brother and an older sister.
An older brother and older sister. Okay, yeah. And then we also have Mark Christie, who's president of Hobie Surf Shops. And the surf shops are in Laguna Beach and Dana Point. And
Del Mar, San Clemente.
How many are there now?
Five.
And guys, I'm going to ask you, can we hear okay, April, the voices? Are you getting those strong enough, or do they need to... Yeah, just keep in mind that that's going to pick up your voices there. So, you know, I was doing some research, and there's so much really out there on your father. You know, surfboards, catamarans, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards. He started his business here in Laguna Beach, right? Sort of building wooden surfboards out of his family's home here in Laguna Beach back in the 50s. Either one of you, Jeff or Mark, I mean, just for those who may not know who Hobie was, how would you kind of describe that in a thumbnail for people who may not know? And I know that's hard to believe, you know, because he's such an iconic figure, but how would you sort of describe
For me, of course, he's my father, so
yeah, of course.
That's pretty simple. But
but
no, he was a, you know, he was a very good guy, innovator, always wanted to build a better mousetrap. He just, he was, it wasn't just about surfboards and sailboats, it was anything. I mean, he'd be looking at your office right here and redesigning something. So,
really,
you know, that's kind of what he was all about, pretty much. So, he built golf clubs and all kinds of stuff that never made it to market.
But, really,
but or it wasn't even intended for market. It was just kind of tinkering with things.
Was he like a savant in a sense? One of those guys that just had that really interesting mind that can kind of see things and figure out a way to build it better. Was he sort of that way?
I think he's probably the greatest self-taught engineer I've ever seen. I mean, you look at everything he's done, and it's not just the things you talked about, skateboard trucks, different things. You know, he was an innovator across the board, but he had, you know, he had I think it was a 50, 40, 48-foot boat, and he was, you know, taking that thing out of Dana Point Harbor and thought, you know, damn, I can build a better boat.
Yeah.
So he did. I mean, who does that?
What was his educational background?
Chaffey College, never graduated.
Study engineering? Did he just have a natural?
No, kind of. This kind of sounds funny, but kind of wood shop and just sort of learned along the way. And of course, back then, 1950, the materials he was dealing with were somewhat new. You know, fiberglass wasn't new, but the applications they were using it for, they had big heavy weave boat glass and stuff like that, and so, you know, people would come with new ideas, new material. It's kind of where foam showed up. A guy came up with a little tiny block of foam and proved to him that it wouldn't soak up water. And polyurethane foam existed, but it was very hard to mold and very hard to control. And so he and Gordon Clark developed in Laguna Canyon here. A lot was done here in Laguna Beach. I mean, we're just down the street from our original house and where he shaped his first balsa wood boards.
Yeah.
And again, a guy came with a board, said, I can tell you how to build it.
So as his son, growing up in this environment, do you recall sort of tinkering in the garage or working with him on the surfboards? Did you gravitate toward the water early? Or did you sort of, what were your sort of early memories of him tinkering with stuff?
As far as early memories go, to be honest, I don't really remember that much of him tinkering with stuff other than him, you know, he worked a lot. He's not the surfer that didn't work. He's the guy that did work. And, and so, you know, it was always down the street. It wasn't some distant place. He wasn't traveling. It was always local. So I was able to, you know, go hang out at the shop and sweep the floors or do whatever. And I'm also sort of a tinkerer, so maybe I got a little bit of that from him. You know, just kind of always was doing stuff.
How were his surfing skills? Was he a competent surfer?
Yeah, he was a good surfer. He wasn't a competitive surfer, and he wasn't the guys that were surfing, the Corky Carroll and all those guys, they were out at the beach every day. That was their life.
Yeah.
You know, that he went to work.
Right.
He built them boards so they could surf.
And he enjoyed sailing, I guess, as well, early on, right?
The sailing was, he kind of took on sailing from, you know, going to Hawaii and sailing some of the catamarans with Joey Capel and guys like that. And, again, same thing, kind of went through the surf phase. One thing about him, he's 100%. He didn't quit surfing or quit building boards, but when he gets into a project, that's all he can think about. So when he got into sailing, he wanted to build a better boat, something he could launch off the beach and something that was simple. And he found a guy that wanted to work with him and help him financially so he could just get back in the shop and build stuff.
Yeah,
that's
good
where
for
Hobie
him.
Cat came from.
What do you think he was attracted to when it came to the beach and the water and the lifestyle? Did he ever share with you, or did you ever experience those sorts of joys that he sort of gravitated toward? Why do you laugh?
For this?
Talk to me.
He is such a beach guy. I mean, he is the whole family. You know, it's my sister married Jeff. You know, and it was the the altars. They weren't ball sports.
He didn't like me at first.
I loved him, but my sister was young. It's like, don't love him yet.
They played ball sports?
Well, we're ball Christies. We were ball sports people.
Uh-huh.
They weren't ball sports people.
Gotcha.
If it had anything to do with motorcycles or the ocean or anything to do with the beach, they were just, I mean, incredibly gifted, naturally gifted. So, yeah,
right.
It's, you know, I think that apple fell straight down from the tree. Hobie's affinity for the ocean, I mean, never stopped. And I want to kind of circle back. You talk about tinkering. You know, he had these different houses. He had one house in particular that was outside of McCall, Idaho, in New Meadows. And it was way out in the boondocks. And here's this incredible house, you know, and you get there and you drive up and you see it. And then you get in the house, it's like, well, damn, it's like it's a one-bedroom house. What's the rest of it? The rest of it was a shop.
Huh.
You know, I mean, he always had a shop.
Yeah.
You know, when he had his place on Beach Road, there was the house, but there's the shop. You know, so it was... he was kind of a mad scientist in that way, but the difference was, you know, Frankenstein always came to life. Everything he pursued, it just, you know, he would just, as Jeff says, he would just be keep after it until it worked, and until it worked better than whatever the existing thing was. And a lot of times there wasn't an existing thing.
Right.
So that is an inspiration, certainly to these kids. I watched them leading that same kind of lifestyle, and the grandkids and. And it was an inspiration to me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to do something, do what it takes to do it right.
Well, you know, I have a question written down here, and that was going to be where I was leading, is, well, you know, what was one of the life lessons you would say? I know that's a complicated question in a way. I'll tell you my dad's. You know, set your priorities, and you know how to make your decisions. Life's a matter of decisions based upon priorities. If your priority is money, you know what decision to make. If your priority is family, you know what decision to make, right? That was sort of his one lesson. What would you say is one of the life lessons your father taught you?
I think, generally speaking, was to be kind to everybody.
Really?
Seriously. I mean, he was a nice, he'd talk to anybody, nicest guy.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about money. It wasn't about anything like that. If you wanted to talk about changing this headset here, he'd spend an hour-long conversation talking to you about it. And that was, you know, it didn't matter where you came from, he was interested in that. And all the sports, the Hobie Cat racing and all that was kind of developed along those same lines, where it was kind of it wasn't about how fat your wallet is, which is largely what sailing is.
Yeah.
It was about, you know, everyone that could come and compete, and whether you're a waste management guy or a lawyer, it didn't matter. You come together and compete on a level playing field.
Is that maybe, from what I read, and I never met your father, I never knew your father, so this is all just based on what I was able to vet online and research through the book, right? He seemed to be encircled by a lot of people that really respected him and really wanted to kind of help him succeed. Is that a fair assessment of the people that he was surrounded by, Mark?
You know, you couldn't not like the guy. Here is this internationally famous guy, but I think that the person that was least impressed with it was him.
Really?
You know, it was never about money. It was never about, you know, accolades. In fact, you know, the moment the lights, you know, when the camera went on, he'd leave the room. You know, he didn't want to be patted on the back or whatever. He wanted to kind of move on to the next project. But he did, you know, going back to your question before, you know, life lessons. I mean, he was, I met, obviously, Hobie later on. Jeff met my sister, and I did love him. You know, he was a mentor to me. We were partners on some things, and he is the reason that I have the surf shops. And I, you know, he suggested it initially, and it's like, what are you talking about? He said, well, you know, you can't know everything, you know, and you don't need to know everything. Just surround yourself with people who are really good at things and let them do what they do. And that's something that I've tried to live by, certainly. But one thing he did say to me, which I think sort of, you know, is a metaphor for his life, and this was years later, was he said, you know, if you love what you do, it's never work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't love it, it'll never work.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, you know, that's
I like that.
I've passed that along to my son, and I'm waiting for it to kick in. And you know, it's but it's a great life's lesson.
I love that.
So Jeff, got the surf history story with Clark Foam. When does the sailing thing come into it, and the Hobie Cat development, to your recollection, and where did your father's passion lie between surfing and sailing, or were they equal?
I think they were. I would say they were equal. I mean, he had the passion for surfing early on when he was a young kid. I mean, he literally came down to and built himself. You know, he wanted a surfboard, so he built it. Is how he got a surfboard.
Yeah.
He didn't go ask dad for money and all that, or I think he did. It was a couple of dollars to buy the wood or whatever. But I think. As he went through surfing and they developed the foam fiberglass board and the, you know, manufacturing, it starts to become production and you know, he's a designer, so he wanted to move on. I don't think he ever picked anything because he thought there was a market there. I think he picked it because he thought he wanted to do it and he'd hope the market would come. I mean, that was sort of his, you know, they didn't do research and say, oh, you know, you're not going to sell very many of those, you know.
Right.
That wasn't the way he did it. He basically built stuff that he thought people would like, that his friends wanted to come play with. And that was kind of where the sailing, they were sailing on and off the beach down in Dana Point. And obviously this Laguna Beach was littered with Hobie Cats for a long time.
Right.
You know, of his innovations, could you highlight a few that sort of stand out in sort of that legacy of his? For those who don't know.
Well, obviously, the foam fiberglass surfboard is, you know, today it's still the same way they build surfboards since 1950.
Good.
Foam was 68. And I think the Hobie 16 or the Hobie 14, but really the Hobie 16 is it's like a Volkswagen. It's a Volkswagen Bug. It still is raced worldwide competitively. I was just in a world championships in Australia in January, and there was 600 competitors sailing Hobie 16s. The boat was built in 1972.
Wow.
And it's awesome boat, and it's a great boat to race. And
amazing. Any others? Any one other that you can think of? One of his innovations? There's so many.
Like Jeff touched on it earlier. He would be telling you, and not only, you know, even when the show was over, he'd be telling you why, you know, the layout here doesn't work. And why you should be doing
it doesn't, by the way.
And then you think about it, and you think, damn it, you know, he's right.
Yeah.
And he was right. I mean, and it was every little thing you do on a daily basis. So you always. If Hobie was talking off into the corner of the room, you kind of wanted to be listening because he was probably had a little tidbit there. But you know, he got into golf later on, and he figured out his alignment wasn't working. So a lot of the stuff that you've never heard of was amazingly innovative. He had this little thing that would sight, you know, lay you out and whatever. And it's like, no, I think I'm pretty straight. I play golf, you know. And we used to play a lot of golf together. And I thought, no, I'm pretty well aligned, and sure as hell. You know, I'm not. I mean, it's just a simple thing that you carry, and it was 100 things like that.
He initiated it, you know, speaking of golf, which I'm not a golfer, I'm not a ball sport guy, as you've
been
told. And you probably can explain this better than I can, but he initiated that at Ironwood Golf Course, where he has a house out in Palm Desert, a silver tees. He did all the math and analyzed how all the handicaps work, and they actually put tees in.
Depending on your skill level, they'd move tees forward so that, you know, you could actually play it's like guys say, I mean, I want to come back as a woman so I can play from the red
right.
tees. It was sort of like that. They moved the tees forward, but for a lot of the people that were playing out at Ironwood, and this is an amazing course, but it's a championship course, so, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are. If you're 55 years old, you know, you're not par in that course. So he did all the calculations and moved them up and set them and went to the board, and they built them, and they're known as the Hobie Tees.
Yeah.
Amazing. You're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is Radio Caravan. We're going to take a one-minute musical break. We're paying tribute this morning to the life of Hobie Alter. In the studio, of course, we have Jeff Alter, Hobie's son, and Mark Christie. We're back in 60 seconds, April. You're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This, of course, is Radio Caravan. We're paying tribute this morning to Hobie Alter. We have in the studio Hobie President Jeff Alter, Hobie's youngest son, and we have, of course, Mark Christie, who's involved in the Hobie Surf Shops, president of the Hobie Surf Shops, right, Mark?
Yep.
Got that right. You know, your father, Jeff, your father passed away from cancer earlier this year, and first of all, I'm sorry and our condolences for that. He was roughly 80 years old. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Died on March 29th. Hundreds of people from around the world came to Dana Point for a paddle out memorial. I'm wondering if you, were you could you kind of describe that event and what that experience was like for you?
We had two events. One was at the ranch, and then one was at Doheny. So both were kind of at different levels,
but
it's one of those things when it happens, especially with someone like him, you don't really know what you're going to do about it. I mean, we knew it was coming, and still we had no plan. It's just something you don't want to plan for, it was amazing. I mean, I don't know how much I can talk about it, but it was the people that the outpouring of people from, I mean, people flew in from all over the world, and we didn't invite anybody. We didn't know. We weren't trying to make a public event out of it. We just figured we're going to put a date on it and hope that, you know, 100,000 people don't show up and maybe only five show up. But as it turned out, a lot showed up, and it was somewhere in between. But the paddle out, you know, as most people I've ever seen in the water, the most out of control paddle out. Surfers have paddle outs, and they all know exactly how you do it. And you hold hands and you go in a big ring. Well, we had sailors and surfers and golfers and all kinds of wacky people out there, power boaters and sailors, you know, and it was just basically a mob. It was really an uncontrolled paddle out.
Would he have loved that?
No, he would have been pissed.
Really?
Yeah, he would have been. We wasted everyone's time, in his opinion. So, and we also, that same day, we took Katie Sue's, a 60-foot catamaran that he built. Or I actually worked on it for 3 years with him, and it's up in Orcas Island, Washington, and there's a sister ship called the Mantis that's in Dana Point Harbor, and the owners of that were nice enough to let us use that boat, and we came off to Oak Street and did his ashes out here and had
beautiful.
A full parade of dolphins going home. So it was,
really?
You couldn't ask for much more. I don't know how to, you know, and we, again, it was kind of a non-planned event. It just happened.
What took place out there at the paddle out? I mean, once you were out there, I mean, was there any sort of service?
Yeah, we did like a Hawaiian kind of service, which you also wouldn't have liked very much. But there was a group of Hawaiians that knew him and wanted to come over and, you know, do the Hawaii thing, the Aloha mm-hmm. thing. And that's, we're not really, we're more California, you know. Mm-hmm. People that think everyone, the surfers, are Hawaiian, but they're not. so for us, it was, you know, it was really nice. They did a really nice job and kind of brought that, you know, spirit of the ocean to the event that, again, we didn't really know how to pull off ourselves so yeah. much.
I mean, it was an indescribable day. Jeff talks about, we took the mantis out. We took it off of Oak Street, so we're looking at the family's house, you know, still in the family, and where the boards were built in the garage in 1950. It was just sort of it was a beautiful day, like a magic day, and then taking the boat up, and it was, you know, and the other than me and the list of people on the boat were kind of the who's who, but more than the who's who, they were the soul of California surfing, mm-hmm. literally the soul of surfing. I have chills even just thinking about it. So on the way back, you know, we're heading back, and there's no idea what to expect. As Jeff said, it's not an invite thing. It's just sort of, hey, it's going to be here. If you want to come, come. And when he says we saw some dolphins, it was absurd. How many? I mean, we went through a school of spinner dolphins, and there were between 500 and 1,000 of these things.
Wow!
And they are literally just turbining through the water, following the boat. They're on all sides of us. I mean, it looks like you could have just jumped off and landed on their backs. And then this whale breaches off. Just off the boat, and it's like, okay, wow, you know what, Hobie?
Yeah, this is crazy.
You know,
it's right?
Like, well, you know what? I'm not convinced yet, Hobie. You know, show me a unicorn. So, I this is a true story. The next day, my wife and I were sitting downtown, and this girl comes walking up the street by B of A. We're down by Zinc Cafe, and she's got a unicorn head on.
Wow!
It's like, really? She worked for some candy shop, but just, you know. So we pull back in, and we get off of Dana Point, and you know, we're expecting to see a bunch of people on the beach, at least some people, right? So we get there, and it's, you know, maybe there's 100 people or something on the beach. And we thought,
we took the boat from Oak Street, and the plan was to come back to the paddle out with the boat. So Susan, his wife, and those didn't want to paddle out could be out on the boat. So it was kind of we ran back into this big event. We weren't really on the beach.
Right at Doheny. So we took this outrigger in and got into the beach and thought, well, you know, there's a good amount of people here. But then we walked back deeper into the park at Doheny and came over this ridge, and there were thousands of people.
Wow.
I mean, just thousands of people and thousands of vintage boards and this stage set up, and all this stuff just seemed to almost happen like spontaneously, and they had this beautiful presentation, and then all these people, like Jeff said, you know, probably a lot of them getting on some sort of a board or floating object for the first time. It was like a Grunion run going back out there, but you know, I mean, we'll never see anything like it again.
It sounds like, you know, even though you say he might not have liked it, but it almost seems like that collection of people was almost the perfect testament to who he was, from different industries, different walks of life, you know, different backgrounds, all coming together in a, you know, random combination.
Definitely so. It was all walks of life, and you know, he touched a lot of people in the sailing world and surfing world, and you know, so it wasn't just a surfing thing. It was a lot of different people.
Emotionally, on that day, Jeff, what was running through your head? I mean, this impressive turnout for...
the event at the ranch was equally as big and a little more personal probably than the paddle out, mm-hmm. Just because it was a little more structured. The paddle out was a little unstructured. But, I guess it dawned on me that, you know, how many people he truly touched and how much respect those people had for him.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. You know, he was inducted into the National Sailing Hall of Fame in 2011, which is affiliated with U.S. Sailing, the United States Naval Academy. I sort of looked it up online and I sort of vetted this website. Other Hall of Famers that year, I want you to hear this, included Dennis Conner, who won 4 America's Cup, and a Ted Turner, who made the cover of Sports Illustrated 1 year, 1 month, I guess, for his sailing accomplishments. The Hall of Fame describes your father as the undisputed king of that enviable, sun-drenched subculture of Southern California, beach entrepreneurs, excuse me, clad in Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops. Was that him?
Yeah. I mean, casual dress, and you know, but what they're talking about there is that he took sailing out of the yacht clubs and put them on the beach and turned it into a more accessible sport, which in turn helped sailing and brought more people to sailing. They might have ended up back in the yacht club, but that was really what I think they're kind of hitting there.
Was he? Did he like being inducted into the Hall of Fame? Or was he sort of?
I think he actually did like that.
Yeah.
I think he was pretty proud. We were pretty proud of him, and I think he was too. I think that was a he gets a lot of credit for a lot of what he's done, and so.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know. Maybe even.
No. But that's interesting.
I mean, it's now it's tons of credit since his passing for sure. But but going into it, you know, even you know today's young surfer has no idea what these pioneers did to bring the sport to where they are today, and they don't really even care, which is somewhat unfortunate.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Sailors, you know, the same thing. They look at the Hobie cat as a little beach cat that, you know, that's just, a, you know. That, and so those types of things. So when someone like U.S. Sailing comes and gives him credit like that, that's I think that's impressive and it's deserved.
Well, I mean, you know, so think about it. Back in the days when he developed this Hobie cat, it was yacht clubs, right? It was yacht clubs. It's Caddyshack. You know, these guys, you think about it, and all of a sudden, you know, here's this guy spoiling the whole deal, and he's got a boat that you can buy for a couple $1,000 and you can keep on the beach and you can launch through the waves, and they just didn't think it was, you know, they didn't want any part of it. That's not sailing.
Right.
That's not sailing, sir, you know, but, and then all of a sudden, you know, and then the travesty of brightly colored sails. You know, oh my God, yeah. What next? You know,
sales it's were
so you know, but I mean, you know, and it was almost the same way with surfing. You know, by making the foam boards, you could get them to the beach. They were less expensive. Balsa was running out, so he was always kind of thinking. Well, he wasn't every man. He wasn't every man. It was never about money that I could see to him in any way. And he just wanted to have fun. And if something made him smile, it's like, well, let's share this with the rest of this crowd. So.
Was he equally a strong business person as he was an innovator?
I'll take it, baby. Well, he wasn't. He was nobody's fool. I mean, he knew.
Right.
He knew. He had just a great seat of the pants gut sense for just about anything. But he wasn't a guy that poured over spreadsheets. I doubt he ever glanced at a spreadsheet. He was more about doing something, and circling back to what I said earlier, find people that are very good at things and let them do what they do. So if it was, you know, surfboard manufacturing, he had people kind of running that. If it was the surf shops back in the early days, you know, he brought on Dick Metz, and Dick Metz knew the value of a nickel. So, you know, and really knew how to run those shops. So he always sort of had, you know, if he was Martin, he had a Lewis, you know, in these different aspects, and you know, he knew how to pick talent.
That's beautiful.
Mark, how did he mesh with the rest of the Orange County sort of surfwear community? Obviously there's a lot of iconic brands that have developed right here in Orange County, and you know, you think of Hobie within that same category, although with surfboards and sailing a little different. But how did he mesh with the other guys that were around in this era, you know, from the 60s, 70s, and 80s that developed these great brands here?
Well, so, I mean, you know, as Jeff well knows, a lot of the brands, you know, the significant brands started out mostly either in the trunk of somebody's car or in a garage in Laguna.
Right.
You know, Quiksilver was sold out of a garage. Gotcha was sold out of a garage when Billabong came here. And the funny thing is, it's still like that. All the chairmen of these various companies, you know, live within a mile of where we're sitting right now. But, you know, it wasn't so much that he was a competitor of theirs in terms of the product. He had these surf shops. And if you wanted to really be legit, if you wanted to have cred, you were in Hobie Surf Shop. I remember when I was a kid, I worked at Stuart Avis downtown. Stuart Avis was this men's store where the Candy Baron is now. And we sold OP shorts, you know, and OP 900s, these corduroy shorts. I mean, that's what you wore to school. I worked at Stuart Avis, and I drove to Hobie Dana Point to buy them because that's where you bottom.
Right.
And Dick Metz, circling back to Dick, he worked out some deal with OP, and Hobie was involved in OP, you know, when it was forming, where he got the new colors, you know, like 2 weeks before anybody else. So if you wanted to, you know, have that new bright red, you know, 6-inch inseam short, you had to rip down to Hobie's and get it, and it was like that. So guys would come to them and say, hey, I got this idea. I got this idea for a brand. It's Quicksilver. Can I get 3 feet of your rack in your stores? And that, and it was literally the incubator for the surfwear industry.
It's funny you say that. When I moved here as a kid, I grew up in the city of Chicago, northwest side near Wrigley Field. We moved here in 1979. So here is this inner city Chicago kid coming to Laguna Beach. My parents rented a house up at Top of the World. And my cousins who had lived here before said, we have to get your outfit fixed. I had cut off jeans and bad t-shirts. And they actually took me to the surf shop, Hobie Surf Shop down in Dana Point. And I came home outfitted with OP shorts and nice. Quicksilver and all the Hang Ten, all the brands then. So it was
yeah. Changed your life.
And it completely did.
All those guys, you know, Duke Boyd and Jim Jenks who started OP, Duke Boyd, Hang Ten, those guys were all friends too. You know, they were all the same type of early innovators you know, before the Quicks and before the Billabongs. And my dad actually owned a piece of, in the very early days of OP, you know, gave him like $10,000 or something, best money he's ever spent. So those guys, they all were the same, came out of the same cup. And there's not that many of them left anymore. They're right. really Waterman right. innovators that do the whole deal. I mean, it's you know, it's now all about business and all that. So.
Mark, I asked Jeff this question earlier. What life lesson or maybe even business lesson did you learn from Hobie?
There's just too many.
Yeah.
Yesterday was his birthday.
Oh, it was? Okay, I didn't know that.
Halloween. So, you know, but I think of him, I've lost, you know, a lot of people in my life, both my parents, my brother, and I think of them all the time, but there's so many, but it relates to business, it relates to this, it relates to that, but really, it goes back to what Jeff said earlier. Just be a good person.
Yeah.
Just be a good person. Jeff, you know, spoke at the service that we had at the ranch. And you go on and you Google Hobie Alter on the internet and you get a bazillion hits. But he said, you know, he was looking, was there anything negative? Was there anything negative on any of these sites or whatever? And he was just one of those guys. Actually, he was like my brother where you couldn't. Nobody had a bad word to say about him. He was just a nice guy, whether you were the guy, you know, bussing the table at a restaurant or the chairman of some company. He treated you the same way with equal respect, and I think, you know, that pervades.
You know, I when I vetted him online and researched as much as I could, I noticed that. I noticed there was no negative comment, no negative publicity. It almost felt to me like it was manufactured by some great public relations machine. I know it wasn't, don't get me wrong. But I never put it together that was just who he was.
Yeah, no, there's a surreal story of Mike Hinson, you know, this guy that used to hang around the shop, and he was one of the surfers for the original, you know, Endless Summer. And Hinson, in his book, he wrote a book about his life. He stole a bunch of surfboards from Hobie, left a window open, ripped off, you know. But he was a much better surfer than he was a thief, so they picked him up like the next day. And you know, a couple of years later, you know, the Endless Summer was happening, and he wanted to go, and they wanted him to go, and the only guy that would loan him money to make the trip was Hobie.
Wow.
I mean, he just you know, he had that kind of forgiveness and that kind of, you know, faith in human nature, unprecedented.
Tell me about the wall downtown on the side of your building there.
The Waterman's Wall. It's basically the Waterman's Wall is the product of a guy. I never met the guy before. Randy Morgan, an artist, great artist, maybe less of a businessman, but through a friend of a friend, he came to me and wanted to do a piece on the wall. And in fact, that's a building that I owned with Hobie Alter and Dick Metz and still with the family today. But basically, it was intended to be a celebration of everything Jeff's talking about, the beginning of the ocean lifestyle here in Laguna Beach. So it touches on everything. It's got the skimboarding, and it's got surfing, and it's got sailing, and it's got all of that stuff. It's got McGillivray Freeman, you know, down there. But you know, I think the most prominent piece of that is a shot of Hobie tandem surfing. So it's a, It's nice because, you know, this place, I mean, Laguna, it was this incubator, and it was like this amazing incubator. And there really isn't, that story hasn't really been told, so it's nice to see that wall's, you know, getting some attention.
Yeah, beautiful. You were instrumental in making that happen?
Actually, we just gave them the wall.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
You know, they did it. Clay Berryhill, who I know that you know, it wouldn't have happened without Clay Berryhill. He you know, gave them the seed money and then some additional seeds and then some additional seeds, but... you know, we gave them the wall. Randy had the inspiration. I helped them at least get the stuff through the city. But no, it was basically Randy and his crew. But I mean, we're proud to have it down there. It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah, a beautiful tribute. Jeff, you've got a book in front of you here, Hobie, Master of Water, Wind, and Waves. Can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, I just we're lucky enough that this book actually got completed before my dad passed away. It was something we wanted to do for a long time, and. My wife Lori and I have been, you know, we always talk about, we got to get all this stuff down on paper, and my sister got involved and we tried to write it for a while, and we didn't want to just go out and sell it. We wanted the story to be accurate.
Sure.
It wasn't about selling books. It was about, you know, just getting it down. And it's a big, long story with a lot of different people have different perspectives. Paul Holmes got involved with us and helped us write it and did a great job. It's become our Hobie Bible. We now look up dates and things like that to figure out what's going on. And there's great pictures, and it's just nice because it really does tell the story pretty complete. I mean, it's a good long story of.
It's available for people who may want to purchase.
It's available at the Hobie stores. It's available for purchase. It's been out now for about longer than that, probably 8 months or something. The nice thing is my dad got to read it. He also was very technically involved with making sure every fact was correct. He didn't want to step on anyone's toes and claim something that wasn't his, and it made it a little more difficult for Paul to pull it all together, but it worked, and it's good.
For those who don't know the business of what you guys are doing and the shops and the manufacturing and the clothing lines, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of the business?
I've been working for my dad since 89. I actually did woodwork. I worked in the canyon with Tom Brockman, a local kid here, and we had a little woodworking business for a while there. And then he owned OP, and I was involved with that a little bit. And so we own the brand. We don't do it in a we kind of do it to people like that respect it and kind of keep it at the level we want it. We're not trying to sell out or go turn it into a whole bunch of money, really.
Mm-hmm.
And we have apparel. We have a deal with Hurley that they do. We have a Hobie by Hurley line. Local guy Doug Bunting, who I've known since I was a kid, is involved with directing that aspect of it. Of course, Mark and the retail stores, and they've done a spectacular job at representing what we want, you know, as far as we all want. It's just the stores are fabulous, the look's good, the history's there. We have a sunglass line that my brother started in 1982. In and around the water, we decided, my dad kind of thought we ought to make a really good polarized lens, and then polarized was around, but it was really Ray-Ban and not a lot of, now everyone has polarized, but in 82 they didn't. He developed this lens, still the same lens, and it's a spectacular high-end sunglass that we only make polarized because we think that's the only way you should look at the ocean.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just different products we kind of put our name on that we do. We stand-up paddleboards, surfboards, we manufacture that still here ourselves. Mm-hmm. Down at Dana Point.
And then, Mark, the shops, obviously you made a point that, you know, Southern Californians who can drive to one of these shops can come down and purchase their clothing line or whatever they need. But Laguna and these other communities where your shops are located also have a lot of tourists coming into town. And what have you found about the tourists who come into your shops?
Well, you know, I mean, actually Laguna, if you were talking about the breakdown between tourism and locals, Laguna's the only one that really has a significant tourist business. You know, by and large, the people that walk into the other stores, it's almost like they're walking into Cheers. You know, everybody behind the counter knows their name, and they come in because they feel like they're part of our family. I mean, we treat, you know, the customers like family. We happen to have this location in Laguna that has this, a tourism element as well, but still about 80% of our business down here is still locals. I want to keep circling back.
Please.
Jeff's doing such a great. So glad this book got written, because you know the last person that really kind of wanted to see it written for the longest time was Hobie. And it was because he never, you know, once again, he never wanted to blow his own horn. And I'm so glad it was written. And I thought I'd heard all the stories. You know, I'd hung around with the Metzes, and I'd hung around with the Hoffmans, and I'd hung around with all these different guys. But there were, in reading the book, I read it literally cover to cover when it first came out. I couldn't stop reading it. And the thing that I liked about it was in every chapter, there's some guy. And, you know, in one particular chapter, I'll think, Grubby Clark. Gordon Clark, Grubby Clark, and they were saying, "You know, you guys did this great thing." He's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." No, it was Hobie. It was a chance for the guys that were there, guys who are iconic, to say, "Yeah, we did a lot of neat things, but it was that guy.
Yeah.
It was Hobie that really
knocked
it out of the park and really kind of accelerated the whole genre."
We've got, I think, 2 minutes. April, how much time do we have here?
About 2 minutes.
I read a 1987 article in the Los Angeles Times about your father. And they said that he just wanted to, and this is a direct quote, build better surfboards and kayaks and boats and have a good time. And I'm wondering, either one of you, maybe both of you can answer this question. What do you think the cultural legacy is that he leaves behind for future generations? What do you think the one thing that will always be there for those future generations of surfers and kayakers and sailors and so forth? That's a tough question.
Tough question.
I apologize.
That doesn't sound like his quote, but tough question.
Yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't his quote. It was the LA Times quote.
No, I'm just...
No, yeah.
Doesn't sound like something he'd say. I don't know. What's that?
Well, I mean, so, you know, from my standpoint,
yeah.
You know, Jeff was talking a few minutes ago about, you know, we're doing sunglasses and we're doing this and we're doing that. And we own these surf shops, and
right.
it's here's this amazing name. And if we wanted to, we could open 500 surf shops around
yeah.
the countries, and we could go to every single mall, and we would say, you know, give us 2,800 feet, blah blah blah, and we'd make a lot of money.
Right.
You know, the name would do that, but it wouldn't have the soul. It wouldn't have the essence. It wouldn't have the absolute commitment to what this guy always stood for, which was quality. And honesty. You know, you can't go, I won't name some of the other surf shops, but you go into these places, surf shops in these malls, and they're not surf
right.
shops, but he was about integrity in every aspect of his life, and integrity in terms of quality. So if you see the name Hobie on something, and that's kind of what he stood for, if you get a Hobie surfboard today, it's not something you bought in Costco or whatever, it's the real deal, shaped by the real guys with their own hands. That's the way it was back in, you know, in the 1950s, and that's the way it was last week in the original factory, you know, down in Capo. And I mean, that's to me the legacy, at least for me, is have fun, but do it right, you know.
You both are very protective of him and his legacy and his brand, and it actually shows in the way the culture of your business that you're running as well. Because like you said, you could put up as many shops around the country as you wanted to, I guess, right? You could attach that brand name, that trademark name, to whatever you want to, but you're very selective in what you choose.
It's you know, for me and Mark too, I mean, I married his daughter.
His sister.
I married Lori in 86, so we've been around for a while, but it's our family. It's
right.
our life. It's not a brand. It's
yeah.
our life. It's
yeah.
what I lived the life. I sailed. I raced sailboats. I surfed. I did all this wonderful stuff that I was lucky enough to get to do, and to play with these toys and play with the prototypes. And here, try this. See how this works. You know, go break this. We want it to be stronger. You know, I was like, okay, I'll go break it.
How fun.
So, you know, that was kind of our life and our family. So it is. It's our life. It's not just a brand.
Beautiful. Guys, I appreciate you coming in. I know you're both busy with your schedules and everything else, but I really do appreciate all the time you spent.
My wife texted me. I'm supposed to say this book's available at Tuvalu, too.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. You're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. On behalf of myself, Scott Hayes, and, of course, Jim Bastian, this is Radio Caravan. Don't forget, 8 p.m. tonight, 12 noon tomorrow, Radio Caravan on Cox Channel 3, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Rick Reif. Okay, April, take us out of here with a little surf music, if you have it available.